Alliance Fellowships. Unfortunately, we're in the Lincoln room, not in the Jefferson room. That would have been kind of nice if that worked out, but that's all fine. And, so this morning I want to, I want to tell you a bit about the, Jefferson Science Fellowships and why, in my opinion, this is a program tailor-made for horticulturists. So my outline is I want to tell you what the purpose of the Jefferson Science Fellowships are, what do the fellows do, who are the fellows, why do I think horticulturists are a no-brainer for this? And then a few details about the program and then how to apply if you might be interested in that. And so this program was established back in 2003, back when Colin Powell was Secretary of State. And when he announced the program, he said this is a new model for engaging the American academic science, technology, engineering, and medical communities in the formulation and implementation of U.S. foreign policy and international development programming. So it's a sort of a partnership between the State Department, USAID, the national academies, and the academic communities. And so here's the 2014 class of Jefferson Fellows with Secretary of State John Kerry. And so I can't imagine that as a Jefferson Science Fellow, you're going to be rubbing shoulders with the Secretary of State every day, but maybe you get the opportunity to meet some of these movers and shakers along the way. So an idea about the organizational chart for USAID and where a Jefferson Science Fellow might fit into things. You can see in blue, sort of in the middle of the screen, here are the functional bureaus, and these are bureaus within USAID that serve a particular function, such as Bureau for Global Health or Bureau for Food Security. Then underneath that, sort of in the charcoal kind of color, we have the geographic bureaus. And so these are bureaus that function across areas, but within one geographic location. And so it might be Bureau for Africa, Bureau for Asia, et cetera. And if we look at Department of State, which is a bit more complicated. It's a very large organization. In fact, here in D.C., there's about 45,000 Department of State employees and about another 30,000 or so around the world. So pretty large organization. And I realize that you can't read that, but take my word for it. There's geographic bureaus like the desk for Japan or for Asia or whatever it might be. And there's also functional bureaus that function on a certain topic area, and sort of it's sort of a matrix of those two. So what do fellows do? Okay, Jefferson Science Fellows spend 1 year on assignment in either the State Department or USAID as science advisors. There might also be engineers, but in our context, it's science advisors on foreign policy or international development issues. At the moment, the State Department is not in the mix, so it's USAID only. And we can talk more about that later if you might be interested. As an example of what the fellows do, this coming year, starting in the fellows report for duty on August the 20th, so it's a couple of 3 weeks from now, and there's five fellows in this class, and I'm one of the five, and I want to outline the five opportunities that were given to fellows this year. And that will give you the sort of flavor of some of the things that Jefferson Fellows might be involved with. Here's one, and all of these are in USAID. This one is in the Global Development Lab, and the purpose of the lab is to increase the use of scientific research for improved development outcomes. And so it's to integrate scientific research into the goals of the agency. And so this particular one is the fellows expected to provide scientific, technical, and intellectual leadership to contribute towards the advancement of translating research into impact. Well, that kind of sounds like extension, doesn't it? And so this is one of the reasons you'll see this theme going through is why I think horticulturists are a really good fit for this program. So here's another opportunity in the current year, and this is in the Bureau for Food Security in the country strategy and implementation. So this is across all the geographic areas where USAID works. And this is to look at social inclusion. And so this is to include both gender and youth involvement in development programs. And again, across all the geographies where USAID operates. Another opportunity for the current year is in the Global Development Lab in the Operational Innovations team. And a couple of areas that they highlighted were areas such as preventing or countering violent extremism and operating in non-permissive environments. And this is environments that we're not supposed to be operating in. And how can we still have an influence in those places? And it could also focus on organizational health of USAID as an organization. With many of these opportunities, they're written pretty broadly, so it has scope for the fellow coming in to bring their own skills and perspectives into developing something. And talking with people that have formerly been involved in this program, their advice is this can be whatever you want it to be. And so you need to be proactive and get involved in things, and you have considerable scope to work in areas where you can see where you can have a contribution. Another opportunity is an evaluation and impact assessment. And this is based around using evidence-based analysis to look at evaluation and assessment of various programs to help evolve the programs into more effective areas. And the last opportunity revolves around energy and infrastructure. And this is especially in Europe and in Southeast Europe. And so looking at energy and water, especially where there's a lot of hydroelectric power, how the flows of resources and energy flow, and how can we use that knowledge to better leverage opportunities in the development sector. So who have the fellows been? There's been about 140 fellows in the program, and so I went through and categorized them. And as you can see, engineering are the largest category, medical, vet, geography, earth sciences, environmental, and biology have been well represented. Let me see if I can operate this. If we look at agriculture and forestry right here, there's been 7 folks from agriculture and forestry out of 140 or so. And so generally we have not been well represented in this program, and we've been outshone by the engineers, I guess, but hopefully you've seen there's a tremendous scope for horticulturists to be involved. And so as I mentioned, there's only 7 folks in animal science, forestry, ag engineering involved in this program. And of those 7, only 3 are horticulturists. And I'm the first horticulturist involved in this program whose name was not Davies. I don't know why that is, but anyway. And so Fred Davies, many of you know Fred, involved in ASHS for a long time. He was a Jefferson Science Fellow in 2013. Peter Davies at Cornell was in 2011. And I'm listed for a couple of years. That's a long story, which I can tell you about later. So what did they do? Fred Davies served in the Bureau for Food Security, and he worked with the whole of U.S. government Feed the Future program to advance food security. So these whole of government programs is cross-cutting across agencies and departments. And so in that role, he worked with folks in USDA, probably NIH, in State Department, in USAID, across agencies to try to bring together better cross-agency integration into addressing some of these issues. And I think that's pretty interesting work. And it's interesting, at the bottom, this is in his bio from the webpage, he is an advocate of using high-value horticultural crops that enhance human nutrition, increase entrepreneurship of women farmers, and can be profitable when intensely farmed on small acreage. Well, if that's not a plug for horticultural crops in this program, I don't know what is. Peter Davies was working in the area of biotechnology, looking at the approval of biotechnology crops, especially in Europe. And so he looked at developments in agriculture, food security, and looked at approval of some of these crops and working to obtain the approval of golden rice in the United States. And so this was back in 2011. So why horticulturists? Why do I think horticulturists are a no-brainer for this program? First, we tend to be applied. We're very good as a community about translating science into practical applications because horticulture is an applied science. And so I think we have a lot of skill and experience doing that. I think horticulturists have also good skills at communicating science issues to non-science audiences. Those of us involved in extension, that's pretty much what we do. And so in these government areas, one of the roles is to communicate scientific issues to folks that may not be scientists, maybe policymakers, maybe program implementation, but to bring a science perspective and be able to communicate science to a non-scientific audience. We tend to be multidisciplinary, and these programs tend to be pretty multidisciplinary. And so we're used to working in broad teams. And so I think that's another skill that horticulturists bring to the table. And as eloquently outlined in Fred Davies' bio, horticultural crops really fit into the whole international development sphere. They are very applicable to very small farms and smallholders. They tend to be high value, they're nutritious, they and very applicable to women and youth empowerment in some of these small farms. And so, again, horticulture is a very good fit for that.
5 minutes.
Okay. And so, so why should you apply for the Jefferson Science Fellowship? I think you gain a first-hand understanding of government. We think we know how it operates, but until you get in a situation, that really gives you first-hand experience. I think to experience policymaking, most of us in the academic sector are not very familiar with the nuts and bolts of doing that. Gain experience from different points of view, and get to be able to advise and educate government. I think that's both a challenge and an opportunity. And the opportunity to have an impact on U.S. foreign policy and implementation. And also to develop networks within the federal government, especially within USAID. To qualify, you must be a tenured scientist, technologist, or engineer, or physician at a U.S. institution. You must be a U.S. citizen. And the program's overseen by STAS, that's the Science and Technology Advisor to the Secretary of State. The salary is paid by your home institution, by your university. And so you need to have a MOU signed between your university and the National Academy. There's a living allowance that comes with the fellowship. Living in D.C. is not inexpensive. As someone that signed an apartment lease 2 days ago, it's not inexpensive. And so fortunately, there's a living allowance to cover that. You spend 1 year on assignment in D.C., but it may involve some travel to overseas posts and embassies. Federal security clearance is required. That's an interesting process. And if you want to know more about that, I'm happy to talk more about it. And the idea is that fellows would remain accessible to the State Department and to USAID for a 5-year period to be able to contribute to issues where you have some subject matter expertise. And so selection is based on your stature and your ability to understand scientific advancements and to articulate science to a non-scientific community. And so those are some of the key factors there. So how to apply? The easiest thing, just Google Jefferson Science Fellowship, and you'll find all the detail in the National Academy website there. So you have a flyer. I think you have a copy of this. It gives a lot of the details. Are there any questions about the program? Yeah. The requirements say you must be a tenured faculty member. And that would be, you could ask them and maybe they could say, well, since you don't do tenure, maybe that would be applicable. I don't know. But the requirements say you need to be a tenured faculty member. I don't know how strictly they enforce that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm curious about the non-permissive environment. Could you expand on that?
Not really. I haven't been involved in that. Non-permissive environments are environments where the U.S. government is not allowed to operate directly. Yes. And so the geographic locations where we're not operating directly, but we may operate through other agencies, organizations, entities, and so indirectly. Right. Yeah. That's my understanding. I had the same question. And so that was my understanding of what that's all about. The interesting thing when these opportunities come out, fellows get selected. You're on a short list, you interview, and then those folks selected go through placement interviews where you go and interview with folks in these offices. Having been through that a couple of times, perhaps I shouldn't be surprised, but with both within state and in USAID, there's a bunch of really smart, really engaged, and really passionate people. And that's not the idea that you get from federal employees working in Washington, D.C. when you watch the TV, right? These folks are really, really smart, doing some great work, and are very passionate about what they do. So I'm looking forward very much to this opportunity. Thank you. Sure.
I'll be your next speaker, Mike Snow.